So, Ben, great to be back. It's been
agreed
a long, long time. Been busy, to say the least. I think the we're recording this on Friday. I just got back from Winter Clash, and it was a long weekend. Wanted to tell you all about it. Before that, we got the V2s in, so it's been busy there as well. Wanted to tell you all about that. Feel like we haven't caught up much lately. We've had a few chats here and there, but life has been so busy. It's been hard to find time to hang out with you and keep you posted on what's going on in life.
Yeah, I am really excited to hear about it. The trade show is what I'm the most excited to hear about. I want to know how you did.
Yeah, it was interesting. So I went on. So the only reason that I went was the trade show, right? Okay. I have gotten to a point where I feel like I've seen enough skating, you know? Like, nothing against rollerblading. I love rollerblading, and I love going to events, but that event is chaos. Like, there are so many people in such a small space. The skate park it's the Area 51 skate park. It's in a city called Eindhoven, which is about an hour and a half drive or train from Amsterdam, which is like the main airport that everybody flies into. And it is a fairly big skate park, but they use most of the skate park with obstacles. So it's like packed with stuff.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to watch any of the events, it is just shoulder to shoulder people, you know. They do sell tickets to the event. It's not like it's a public event or anything like that. But they limit it, and I want to say they sold out. They started opening tickets in like January or whatever, and they sold out in a few months. Like, it was super fast this year, faster than I think they had expected.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, like, they have a capacity and they kept it at capacity. They could have gotten more people in if they needed to, right? And I can only imagine how busy it would be if they added another 100 people, 200 people, whatever. Like, there's just no room for anything. I took a picture. So the first night there, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And the first night there, Thursday night, is when, you know, the industry trade show area gets set up. So we, like, go to our booth, so we get to set up and everything.
Did you get a big booth?
Just a small booth. It's the 10 by whatever. Each of the booths, so there's two trade show areas. There's the one upstairs and the one downstairs. The one downstairs, apparently they just started using the downstairs one before. I don't know if it was for overflow or what, but the first year that I went, which last year was the first year that they had, that I know of, that they had the downstairs. And last year was kind of strange. I mean, for us it was okay because everybody knew that we were going to be there, because this was the first time you could see the skates in Europe. So everybody found us, so that wasn't a problem. But I would imagine if you were going just expecting traffic and people to just walk by, it is hard to get to the downstairs one. So as you walk in the door, you go through badging. They check your backpack to make sure you're not bringing in stuff that you shouldn't be bringing in. And you walk up the staircase. And as you walk up the staircase, you look to the left, and through the window in the wall, you can see the trade show downstairs. And that's the last time you're going to see that trade show, until you walk the entire length of the skate park, down the stairs, and then walk the entire length back. It is not an easy room to get to. No, it sucks. But as you walk upstairs, as soon as you get up the stairs, you're at the first trade show. That's like the entrance to the door. So it's like two big rooms, one above each other. And at the top of the stairs, you can enter the first one. But the second one, the downstairs trade show, you have to go and get back downstairs, and there's only two sets of stairs. And unfortunately, you can't get from the upstairs first staircase to the downstairs quickly. You can't get to that door. Unless this year they added a little staircase on the skate park that you could walk out, and you could walk down the skate park to get to the trade show. But that means you have to get on the skate park. And I don't think you could just get to the skate park from just walking across. I don't know that I ever tried that, but I mean, there were plenty of people skating. I didn't want to, you know, with big backpacks and everything. Yeah, or get hit, right?
Yeah.
So first trade show area is on the left, And then it's the bar. So, like, obviously everybody's going to be hanging out there and just chilling. And then you continue walking, and then you get to the staircase. You can go down the staircase, come all the way back, and then you can get to the other trade show. In the corner, so that first night, they have this thing called the Hang Losers event, which is like, it's kind of like this weird, like, game show of sorts, I guess, where they've got all these random judges. I'll put a link, if I can find a link to it. They've got these judges, like, these very strange challenges, where it's like you have to air to something and grind something, or they say biggest 360 or whatever. Or they say you gotta, you know, spin to the up rail and then come back in. And there's just this mad dash for people to do it. Like, it is a event on itself. And a lot of people just come for that event. But walking in and out, trying to get set up for the booth, you know, I'm hauling the suitcases and stuff like that. I could see just this mass of people over in this little bowl area, because it's done in this little bowl, which isn't really part of the event. So during the competition, you know, it's usually done on the big street course. Mm-hmm. The bowl is way over in the corner. You can't really, you might be able to get to it from the street course, but it's not really an area that people compete in, because it's so far removed from, you know, the main street course where the judges are and everything. So yeah, there were, I mean, probably 200 people in this small little packed area. There was a smoke grenade going off. So it was like just pillows of smoke coming. I don't know if it was in the middle of the bowl or if it was at like one of the hips. Like, I don't know where the smoke was coming from, but there was a lot of smoke.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
It was wild. Yeah, it's this crazy event. But just standing from afar, you could see just this smothering of people out there. And I was like, all right, I don't want to go over there. Like, that's my nightmare, right? There's just too many people screaming. Obviously pot everywhere. Like, I just don't, that's not my vibe. But it looked like a lot of fun for the people who were there.
Yeah.
Anyway, that night. Yep.
Every time I've seen anything about those competitions that Hang Losers does, it always looks like a blast, but I'm perfectly fine with watching edits of it. I don't need to be there. Yeah. That's too much for me.
Yeah. I don't want any part of it.
Even Grindsgiving was a little bit too much for me.
Grindsgiving was close. A culture event, yeah.
Yeah, it was real close to being too much for me. But being able to come and hang out at the booth and everything like that made it a lot easier. So
Yeah, you had a place that you could escape. And that, to me, was like the trade show, right? I mean, even though I couldn't really escape, but being downstairs, like, there's, you know, a difference between being upstairs at the trade show and downstairs at the trade show. And upstairs for this year was reserved to the people who were, like, hosting over the years. So, like, it was the Winter Clash 20th anniversary. And they asked for sponsors who were there, you know, over the last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, whatever. So they would get that spot, which is, you know, more foot traffic, more of a premium spot. I think they paid a little bit more. Not a ton more, but, like, I think they paid a little bit more for that placement. Personally, I was excited to just be downstairs because you get people who are deliberately coming to see you versus just randoms that walk by. Now, obviously, if you're trying to get eyeballs on, like, a new product, like, Clark was upstairs and he had, you know, the new plastic, the Faction Plastics, he wanted to get as many eyeballs on it as possible. For me, like, I think people had seen the skates. If they didn't already, they would come find me. Or they were interested in getting the skates and they wanted to talk about sizing and try them on. And it's like, I was excited to have a less busy area and a more, like, focused area. So being able to sit down and talk with people about sizes, talk with people about what they are currently skating and what they should be expecting with Omni, like, that was why I was there. And it was just me this time. So the team wasn't able to show up. Passport issues. And we're also planning on doing the Blading Cup in France in May, I think it is.
Oh, wow.
So that's where they're going to go. And I don't have any reason to be there. Like, I think they're going to have booths there. But I think the booth for us is more Blading Cup in California and then Winter Clash in Eindhoven for Europe and for California, I think, you know, the West Coast, those are the two big events. And then we'll do Crowder Cup, which is in April, in North Carolina. So if you want to do East Coast, that's West Coast, that's Blading Cup. And then Eindhoven, that's Europe. We probably need to do an Asia thing someday, but there is a Blading Cup out there. I don't know if I'm going to be able to swing it this year. But anybody who wants to see the new stuff, I mean, they know where to find me. So it's like, they came up, people were very, like, polite, waited in line, asked to try on the skates, and like, here you go, like, here's the size that you should be trying, give it a shot. Had probably two people at a time trying on skates, and, you know, their little friends hanging out and trying on skates and handing them around. It was really good, like, especially with my, like, I don't want to get overwhelmed in crowds. It was really nice to not have that feeling. And very similar, I think, to Grindsgiving, where people would come up and talk, and you could have, like, normal conversations. Instead of people coming up and asking, like, what's this? What's all about? I don't know anything about this. Like, everybody knew what was going on. They just wanted to see it, you know?
And I remember at Grindsgiving, there was a couple people that were like, wait, what's this skate? And then you kind of had to give a quick little... But I think that only happened like twice. I think the majority of the people that were there knew what they were coming to your booth for.
Yeah, and that was a weird one because we hadn't even announced the skate yet. Like, you weren't able to see the skate. We had it still taped up with the checkerboard. So
yeah, that was pretty cool.
Just a 3D printed sample. Yeah, it was great. So yeah, that was the first day. And so in the trade show, I was sitting, so we were right around the corner from the door. So as soon as you walk in the door, you see us, which was good placement. Arlo with Drug Receipts was right next to me. So that was really nice. I hadn't seen Arlo in, I saw him at Blading Cup, but, you know, aside from briefly seeing him there, like, we didn't really talk at Blading Cup. It was more like, hi, how are you? But yeah, he's been really into it lately. Like, I don't know how much you've been following, but, you know, he did Blading Cup. He did this now. It feels like he's not just, like, the fear, I think, like, if you were to bring back Sennett, right? And you just started making t-shirts, like, the fear is that it's kind of like a cash grab. But it feels like he's,
wonder,
like,
when that happened before.
Into it. Yeah, seriously. But it feels like he's, like, into it. Like, he didn't have to come to, you know, Winter Clash. Like, that's a trip, especially from California. I'm sure that he was fine, like, financially, but I don't know how much he sold. Like, they sold pretty quick, and I don't think you get the Drug Receipts stuff that he makes outside of a few areas. Like, maybe he sells to Loco, but I don't think they have it at most of the shops in Europe. So if you wanted to get his stuff, like, this is your opportunity to do it. Yeah, exactly.
So I had bought a onesie from him, like a custom onesie that he did. Mm-hmm. And I got it just before Dylan was born, or I ordered it. And I told Christine, I was like, hey, I want to order this. And, you know, here's what it is. And, like, this guy, you know.
Yeah.
He's Arlo. I don't need to explain that to you.
Yeah.
And so I immediately did it. Didn't tell her how much it was. I think it was like $55 or something like that. It wasn't nuts.
Yeah.
To me, it wasn't nuts. And so, like, she was just like, hold the fucking phone. And so, like, I'd message him. I was like, hey, man, I'm so sorry. Like, the wife agreed to this, but she didn't really know what she was agreeing to. So is there any way that we can reverse this? He's like, not a problem, man. I'd rather you keep a happy household than have this onesie.
Yeah, seriously. I don't know his prices offhand. I saw his price sheet, but I didn't remember it. Mm-hmm. They weren't cheap. You know, it's definitely a, like, competing with Braindead fashion brand. Like, he's really trying to make it into a thing. It's not just, I'm going to sell a few t-shirts. It's like, I want to have an actual clothing brand, which, you know, I have a lot of respect for. And this stuff is good. Like, it's not my style, but it's very well made. Like, you could see that it was constructed well. Like, he has this hoodie thing that's like a zip up sort of hoodie thing that people were wearing. And I was like, that's actually really nice. It's not just off the shelf screen print your shirt, your logo on a shirt. It's like a little bit higher end.
Like, so I nice get shit.
Yeah, I get the price. But he was busy. Yeah, really busy. Like, people were all about it. And that obviously helped me as well, because he was right next to me. So people would come to me, and they would come to him, and then they would come to him and come to me. It was really, really nice. Somatics was next to him. And do you know Somatics? I don't know that we really talked about Somatics. It's kind of a newer brand.
We haven't talked about them much, but I am aware that they are a thing.
Yeah. So it is a wheel company. I think it started, 2 years ago, maybe? It is, I don't know if they're based in Europe or what.
I thought they were based in Texas.
Yeah. So Fritz is involved, okay. I believe. And he's in Plano, I think. And then it's the Glowicki brothers. I can't remember. It's Josh. And then I can't remember his brother's name who I met,
I didn't realize he had a brother.
Yeah. He was the guy that was working the booth. So I think it's mostly him that's doing the thing. He's also a skater. But he wanted to do a wheel company forever. And I got a little bit of info, cause I was like, I got to learn more about him, cause I don't know anything about him. And the brand doesn't really cross my path, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, he just was interested in doing wheels for a while, but because Powerslide was using AE&D exclusively for all of their wheels, which is the wheel company that was originally in Huntington Beach, and then they moved out to Texas during COVID. They make great wheels. You know, they make all of the Dead wheels. They make Undercover. They made Conjure. They made all of the original Gods wheels. Like, quality wheels. Some of the best wheels out there. Undercover and Gods no longer use them. Maybe they use them a little bit, but not like as a primary wheel source. And I think that happened during COVID when the prices got a little crazy. Remember when it was like super expensive to order from AE&D?
Yeah. And then they were changing to, I know Undercover, I think, had one of the like higher end Chinese companies making wheels for a bit.
Yeah.
And now they might have even had an Italian somewhere. Company.
Yeah. They do it in Europe somewhere now. I don't know all of the sources, but I apparently the Undercover wheels are good. But I don't think they're at the level that AE&D is. Okay. And Somatics wanted to do that AE&D high quality urethane. AE&D has multiple levels of urethane that they provide. I don't think Dead uses that high quality. Dead wants to be more affordable. Somatics want to be more quality. So yeah, their wheels are more expensive. They've got a pretty big line, though. I mean, it's a pretty solid wheel company, which, you know, I think it's great that we have wheel companies again. We might have too many right now, but we definitely went through a drought when there wasn't really any options. You know, I think it was really Undercover, Dead. That's about it. You know, when Conjure came out, they were like, Rob was finding that hole in the market that we didn't really have anything that was like a high quality wheel. And it's like, well, I could do that. So he started doing it.
Yeah. And I think what set Conjure apart was not only it was a high quality wheel, but they did great graphics and they did great mm-hmm. packaging as well. And I think that was their big selling point was they just went the extra mile. Mm-hmm. And I still, Rob, if you hear this, text me or hit me up on Facebook Messenger, cause I miss you, man.
Yeah, I haven't, I think I got there was a post from Rob, a comment from Rob a couple weeks ago on one of the standard posts, or maybe it was a Back to Blading post, I don't remember. Maybe it was a Back to Blade, I think it was the one that, a post that I did with Corey, Cody, not Corey. I broke up so that focused podcast that I do. I broke them up into little segments and then I posted those to the Instagram. And I think he commented on one of those. I haven't really talked with him in a while. Anyway, yeah, they were more like a boutique wheel company where they would come out with one wheel and it was like, you know, four or five colors, maybe seven colors, I think was one of the prints. Really high quality urethane packaging, like the whole nine. It was really, really well done. This is more like a wheel company. So you can go and buy them in the stores and everything like that. They are more expensive, but they are a higher quality. They're using the high quality AE&D urethane. And he was really nice to just chat with him. He seemed like a really cool dude, doing the work. I love brands that are dedicated to blading. Like, he was just wanting to do a wheel company forever and didn't want to compromise. You know, he wanted to make them at AEND because he knew that they were the year they wanted. And it's like, I can't make them because Powerslide's making them there. I'll wait. And it's like, oh, right. No guarantee that it was ever going to happen. But as soon as it opened, it was like, all right, now we'll jump in and we'll do it. That was really cool, getting to know him. Going around the room, there were like a dozen booths in that area. There were a few brands that I didn't recognize, maybe European brands. I think there were some Asian brands that I didn't really know, but I think, you know, I'd seen them last year. I'm not the sort that would just go out and introduce myself. I just don't care, to be honest. I didn't recognize them, but I recognized them from last year. I don't know the brand, though. Directly across from me, though, was Rollerblade, which was really cool. I didn't go upstairs this year nor last year, so I don't remember who was exhibiting upstairs and who all was exhibiting overall at Winter Clash last year.
I know who wasn't.
I know who wasn't as well. It was great to see Rollerblade there. And I don't know if they did last year, but they came out strong this year. So not only was Tom here, but Cameron Talbot came out. Finally got to meet Cameron, which is awesome. He and I have chatted a few times. I think actually after we talked with the podcast, we talked about him. And maybe somebody hit him up and said, hey, they're talking about you or whatever.
And then he
reached out. Yeah. He reached out and he was like, oh, you know, thanks. I think we were talking about how, you know, he deserves a skate. I don't remember what it was, but maybe after Sean's skate, and we were like, oh, he deserves, he's so good. And there was that edit that he did that was like at a playground that was like, you remember that, where it was like a mix of like, there was some cartoon like drawing over it. And then there was like, it was a really interesting edit.
I feel like I do remember that. Something I'm going to have to look up when we're,
yeah,
when
I, we're I can't remember specifically, but I think that was him in it. I finally got to actually sit down and talk with him, which was really cool. It was before one of the shows, probably like Friday morning before the trade show opened. But he was just standing there like in his zone. I walked by him like, hey, you know, it's great to finally meet you. And we chatted for a little bit. He was really excited. So he's getting a pro skate. I don't know that you saw that, but
I did. Someone had posted on Facebook about the teaser they put up. And I was like, I got to figure that out. I got to watch for that. It's awesome that it's awesome that it's a Cameron Talbot skate. He's been deserving of a skate for a long time.
Yeah.
Are you sending him frames?
No, I'm not sending him frames. Rollerblade is really strict about skaters riding their product.
Okay.
And I've spoken with Rollerblade riders in the past, and it never amounted to much. So while I would love to, I don't think that it is in the cards. I think that he's pretty happy with his setup right now. But apparently that skate was supposed to come out a while ago. Like, it's been done for a while, at least designed and everything. But because, and this is rumor, not confirmed, obviously, but rumor, because they ramped up the blank production and ramped up the Sean Keen and the Pigeon production during COVID, Rollerblade used their, you know, percentage forecasting and said, okay, our sales are up here, we're going to do the same in aggressive. So they made, like, you know, more than they needed to.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you've got, you know, say 5,000 skates, I don't know numbers, but say 5,000 skates, and typically you would sell, you know, 1,000, 2,000 skates, you got to wait for those other skates to sell through before you can bring in more, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's what happened. I think that Cameron's skate was ready to be released 2 years ago, maybe even longer, but it's just been sitting there and sitting there and sitting there. It's like, all right, well, it'll happen.
Could you imagine just waiting? And just like, come on. Is today the day? Is today? You're messaging Tom. Like, Tom, what's going on?
I know. Well, and I had this conversation. So I've known Tom for a long time. I actually met Tom So I was a big fan of Tom. Tom was one of my favorite skaters, actually. I don't know if that he's ever known that. But back in the days, I think it was Box Magazine did a profile on him. And both Jason Marshall and I were really big fans of Tom. I think he was doing an alley-oop solo on one of those square rails in Atlanta.
Yep.
And I was like, wow, like, he's got such great style and, like, it's amazing tricks and everything. Because, I mean, there were only, like, 10 different tricks you could do. So I don't know if he had, you know, anything that was new, but he did things that were, you know, impressive to us. So yeah, I was really impressed with him and I was stoked to meet him. But anyway, I mean, we're friendly. We're not friends or anything like that. I don't talk to him about anything, but whenever we do get to talk, it's kind of nice. He has a, you know, family that's like 3 years older than my family. So we kind of talk about where things are and, you know, just like old man conversations. Like we talked about, cause I've been struggling with, you know, back injuries and I, you know, trying to do physical therapy to get myself back into skating. And he was like, dude, like I could do big wheels. Like I ride my twisters everywhere, but the minute I go to a skate park, I'm jacked. Like I need to work out in order to skate aggressive. And I don't know that I want to work out, you know? So it's like, what's the trade-off, you know? If I want to skate aggressive, I'm going to have to physically work out in order to do that. And it's like,
yeah, which isn't a bad thing either, because
absolutely
it's,
not.
It's great for your mental health. It's great for your physical health.
Oh, no
like,
doubt.
I'm not the guy. I'm the kind of guy, like I have a lot of that fitness knowledge, but you look at me and he goes, that guy hasn't seen the inside of a gym in a decade. And it's not true. Like I've gone to the gym a few times since started my new job, but it is very important and it's definitely worth doing. Again, I'm not the guy that looks like he has good fitness knowledge, but I do.
Yeah. Well, I started, so I agree with that. It is important that you take care of your body. I've been trying, but I always fall off the wagon. Like I just have a really hard time sticking with it. I am on a mission to get my 10,000 steps a day. Like I feel like that is the bare minimum for a middle-aged adult to continue to be active. So it's like, if I can get my steps in every day, then I will feel like I am accomplished and my body will like that. You know what I mean? It's been 10 days in a row now that I've gotten my 10,000 steps in and I went so far as to buy a small little portable treadmill for under my desk at work. So I [S2] Nice. [S1] Put the treadmill on when I'm on a conference call and I'm just walking while I'm talking. And the problem is I spend an hour in the morning and an hour in the afternoon sitting in the car waiting to pick up the kid. And then I spend all day sitting, you know, doing work or, you know, I walk around to pack up orders, right? But then I go back down and I sit to do work. And it's like I have no opportunities to walk around. My job doesn't require it. I'm not walking my kids to school or anything like that. So, and it's getting so dark. Like I get home, you know, after dropping off the kid and then I go back to the warehouse and I pack up orders and I get home at like 5:30, 6 o'clock and it's already pitch black outside.
Pitch dark. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not going walking. Like it's cold. And I'm like, fuck that. So yeah. I'm doing the treadmill.
A high vis hoodie.
I need high visibility and one of those lights on your head that lets, like if you're spelunking into caverns, so that I can see where I'm going. So I have a treadmill at home. My wife got a treadmill years ago that doesn't really get used, but I've been using that. And then I have my little portable treadmill. It's like $150, which I didn't know they were so cheap. But if all you're doing is walking, $150, cheap-ass treadmill, put it under my desk. I slide it under when it's not in use. I pull it out when I'm ready to walk, and I get on my conference calls, 30 minutes, walking at 2.5 miles per hour, like manageable pace. When I'm at home and I'm focused and I have my iPad, I'm at 3 miles, which is almost like a slight jog, but it's a brisk walk, you know?
Yeah, and it's not slow, that's for sure.
It cruises. Yeah, I'm feeling great. So I've lost weight, which I'm not so happy about. Like I'm still trying to maintain where I'm at. Like I don't like being skinny, but I've lost like 3 pounds since I started this, which add to that, like, Winter Clash was rough for eating because I was there by myself the whole day and didn't leave the booth. So like the first day was 2 to 10.
Wow.
Like 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. I ducked out at 8:30 because I was like, fuck this. Like all that we're going to have after 8:30 are drunk people finding the trade show somehow, asking questions and wanting to talk. And I'm like, I'm not a therapist, you know? Like if you wanted to try on skates, you should have showed your ass up before 6 p.m. So you'll be back tomorrow. Like, it's cool. Like, so I broke everything down. I told Arlo, I'm like, hey, I'm out. And you're like, what do you mean you're out? The trade show goes on for another hour and a half. And I'm like, no, man, I'm out. Like, I got no time for this. I'm tired. I'm old. And he's like, whatever. Anyway, that was Tom Heiser. So he and I talked all about it. My conversation with Cameron was, you know, I was stoked that he got the skate, and I was like, I have a lot of respect for Tom because he's able to do this in the machine that he has to operate, right? So it's completely different than me deciding that, oh, I want to give Yandrill a skate. And it's like, well, what do? Well, I figure out the colors, I figure out the timing, I figure out the parts, and I make the skate. How hard is that? Like, it's me. That's all I got to deal with.
You're the check signer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. For Tom to go through and say, we need to invest this much money into this skate for this skater that's going to give him royalties, like, he's got to justify all of those steps in order to get a product out the door. Yeah. And for him to be able to actually do it, I think it means a lot. I know that he would love to do more. I know that he doesn't have that ability. You know, Rollerblade, obviously during COVID, sales were booming. So I'm sure that, you know, when they made more Sean Keens, it was like, oh, this is going to be like gravy train. You know, we're going to be rocking and rolling forever. The boom happened so fast, everybody got caught off guard. And then it dropped so fast. Like within 2 years, 3 years, it was back to normal, if not lower than it was before the COVID boom. And how do you predict for that? You know, especially with guys in suits who are like trying to make decisions for, you know, a big corporation. Like, who's going to give this dude, you know, a skate with his name on it and want to pay him money for doing that? Like, that's just not a thing that happens. So yeah, lots of respect for Tom to get that happening. Very, very cool. They had an obstacle on the course that they sponsored for Rollerblade, and it had Cameron's logo on it, which was really cool. There's a picture on his Instagram of him standing next to the thing. It's like this kind of like a tombstone sort of object, but it's like a box, and then the inside of the box is like a cutout, kind of like a square donut, you know, and it's just sitting up there like a tombstone. And then the inside, it also had a rail on it and rail on the top. And then the Cameron Talbot logo was printed on the inside. Really nice. Like,
again,
it's putting something out on the street course. Everybody's going to see. It's going to be in all the pictures, all the videos, things like that. I love that sort of stuff.
But, that's awesome.
And deservedly so. I mean, such a good dude. Like, he had to wait so long to get this skate. At least they did it right.
Yeah, and it's a great looking colorway too. Mm-hmm. Like I was very, I don't know if I was necessarily surprised, but I was very impressed with it. I thought it was a really good looking colorway.
Yeah, so it's like a camo-y style, like a gray camo 45 degree strap and liner like fabric. And then it's like a kind of like an ivory, almost like an off-whitey tan color. Is that right? With like a light gray sole plate, is that? It's been a busy week.
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to. It's not on Roller Warehouse yet.
Yeah, I don't know when it's available, actually.
Yeah. I've only seen a couple of pictures of it, but it wasn't a gross colorway.
No,
like
it's clean.
Some other
skates. Some skates are
came out recently.
Some skates are rough. Yeah. Next to Rollerblade was Echo. Echo's a weird one. They had their first show at Winter Clash last year, so that was the first time that people got to see the skates and everything. The designer is really nice. So dude's name, I think, is Jacob. He was at a Bleeding Cup. He sent messages to me before. Just seems like a proper guy. Likes doing good work. He is a skater. He knows what he's doing. Passionate about making good products. Echo is a weird brand in my eyes because it is this mega big box chain, because they're mm-hmm. they're the umbrella of the company that makes Anarchy skates as well. And what's the name of that? I can't remember what the umbrella company name is. But they make a few different brands, mostly in like the extreme sports area. And mm-hmm. it's a weird vibe for me that something that would make these big box style skates would also make a brand new mold for aggressive, because I always felt as aggressive was this ugly stepchild that doesn't get much, and there's only a few of us who understand it, that sort of thing. And then here is like they, I think we talked about it on the show last year. Here is this brand that like wants to invest money, and it sees that there's a market, and it worries me that money that could go to them or could go to Standard or Faction or, you know, one of the brands that's like nothing but aggressive. Like all that we do is make aggressive skates. And the aggressive market is not getting any bigger. You know, if say there's 30,000 aggressive skaters in the world, right? Mm-hmm. They only need skates once a year. Who's going to service that customer? And it's like the more skates there are out there, the less that an individual brand can sell overall. And that can be difficult if you don't have another industry to back you up. And in this case, they do, because they have, you know, the Anarchy and then whatever the other brands that they represent. So it's always this weird taste in my mouth. Now, obviously, Rollerblade, same thing, but Rollerblade, everybody knows, is this big corporate monolith, right? Echo comes across as more of a down-earth, like, their like branding.
A slightly smaller corporate brand.
yeah. It's a little too polished for us. Like it looks too clean. Their branding looks like their booth looked really nice. And it's like, wait a second, like you don't go here, you know,
we're trash humans. What are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. You look like you know what you're doing. That doesn't make sense. Like you don't belong.
Where's your hand painted sign?
Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. And you know, it's fine. Like so what, for me, though, it leaves this weird taste. And I don't know if that's just me biased because of Standard and because, you know, I want them to succeed and I want Clark to succeed. And I worry that that brand would take from those other brands. But again, that's just the way that I see it. But
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. He's a good dude, as far as I could tell. I mean, again, I've only had limited exposure, but it feels like he knows his stuff, which I always appreciate. It feels like he's passionate about making good stuff for Blading. He sponsors good people. So he you know, brought Becky on, 6 months ago, maybe 8 months ago or so. Awesome. They just announced Burston is on. So he left. Where was he skating? Was he skating Razors? Yeah. What do you know? And then started skating with Echo. I can see them taking, especially in Europe, I can see them taking a few more skaters over the next, you know, 6 months. I think it's that sort of brand that they will get a stronger footprint in the industry. Again, quality skates, for everybody who skated them, I really like them. It's a difficult price, like $240 or something like that, complete, which is... Yeah.
$240 complete from
Logo. I mean, that's a hard price to beat. For, you know, what is a fairly quality skate. So, yeah, I mean, do what you got to. If you want to get a pair of skates and you like the way they look, go for it.
It's not my favorite aesthetic.
Yeah.
But you can tell that there was a lot of thought that was put into the design of the skate, and I think their heart's in the right place. You know, they're trying to put out a quality product, and because of their buying power with their parent company,
exactly,
they can bring the pricing down. But I've not seen a lot of negative stuff about Echo Skates.
Nope. Like
David and Will Seen said good things about it. I think Brandon Drummond said good things.
Yep.
And those two opinions, while I don't know either one of them from Adam, but like I feel like some other stuff I've heard them say and the way that they review their products, I'm like, okay, I feel like I could trust that opinion.
Yeah.
But I'm not skating anything other than standards or the Hendersons that Joey sent me. So
yeah.
I'll never know.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I've heard. You know, we have plenty of people on the Slack who have tried them. Some of them really like them. And to a point where this is their skate. And it's like, it just fits my foot, and it feels great. And it's like, why would I skate anything else? Totally valid. It's hard to say no, especially at the price. That is... funny enough, something that we've never really had in aggressive, you know, back pre-COVID, there were only like four or five brands. And really, if you boil it down, only three brands, you know, because, you know, Power Slide, you know, if you consider God's one of the brands, you know, was actually another one. So there were not that many brands, and now there are a dozen, you know, that's a shift. Especially as we don't have more participants. So something's got to go. We need to figure that out. I do hope that it doesn't have a negative impact, but, you know, that's business, end of the day.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately and unfortunately.
Yeah, fortunately and unfortunately. Like, I do think that if you make a quality product at a good price, I think people are going to support. And if the marketing absolutely. And the team is the same, then... people are going to support. You know, they'll put their money where they want, but ultimately, if the skates are at an affordable price and they fit your foot, it's a silly... there's no reason not to skate them.
Yeah, and I agree with that. That was one of the things I was thinking when I was hearing stuff about another topic I'm sure that we're going to cover shortly. Like, I started thinking about it. I was like, all right, so like, if I want to give Law my money... but I don't like something about the standard skate.
Sure.
What can I fall back on?
Right,
like,
right.
Do I want to take a chance on, you know, a Cougar skate? Do I want to, you know, deal with an Aeon again? And I was like, there's really not much out there for me. But I mean, luckily, you make so many other products. So you're going to get my money anyway, one way or another. It's great that there's so many choices, and it's going to be interesting to see how long we have so many choices.
Yeah, that is the question, and it's too early to tell. The going around the horn, there were a couple other booths. I don't remember. I think Hang Losers had a booth, and I don't know that they were there. I don't know. I don't know anything about Hang Losers. It's such a weird concept to me, but do your thing, boys.
Yeah.
Then in the corner was Red Eye, so Buck was here. I don't know that they had anything new or if they were just selling wheels. I always talk with Buck. We're mostly like business-minded, so we always talk about numbers and how sales were good and everything like that. He had a really good year, so he moved a lot of product, and he was really happy about that. That's what I know about that. Awesome. Exactly. What was nice about that was that's where John Fromm hangs out. Because Buck and John are really good friends, so I was able to just hang out and talk with John, which I don't get to do very often, especially in person. We talk, you know, probably every couple of months on the phone, about a month, once a month or so on the phone. Every now and then on text, probably once a week, every other week. But actually seeing each other in person is really nice. So that, again, is the big draw for Winter Clash. It is a beautiful... event with people who are just all about rollerblading, and they just want to go and have fun. You know, I always say, you know, when you go to Disney, it is the happiest place on earth because everybody's there to have a good time. And it's
exactly.
Like, you don't have assholes. You always have people who are wanting to start fights, right? That's always going to be a thing.
Yeah.
But 99% of people at Disney are there just because they want to have a great time, either by themselves, with their friends, with their family, whatever, but they're there because they just enjoy this. They want to do it. You know, it's not cheap. It's not like this place that you could just go because you're bored. You go there because you wanted to invest time in having a good experience. And that is Winter Clash for rollerblades. It is not a cheap event. I want to say that tickets are like $80. Well, you definitely need to go. So price-wise, I wanted to talk about this. Price-wise, so Winter Clash for me, and I went, take all the industry stuff aside, right? So the booth doesn't matter. The additional luggage for me to bring stuff over doesn't matter. That sort of stuff doesn't matter. Just the raw number. So my flight was like $700 round trip.
Okay.
Which is not bad considering.
For an international flight. That's
for an international flight, right. When you fly from the States, you usually fly to Detroit, New York, or Atlanta, and then fly out from one of those three hubs to, I'm not sure Chicago does it as well, but for me on the East Coast, those are the three that were servicing Amsterdam. There is a an airport called Schiphol, I think it's called, Schiphol, which is like...
Schiphol?
It's like, it sounds like Schiphol, yeah, but I'm trying not to say Schiphol. it is maybe 20 minutes away from downtown Amsterdam with, you know,
How long did it take you to get to the red light district?
Well, so that's the thing. It was so far that I couldn't go to the red light district, but it is close enough that you could if you wanted to make that trip. Yeah, all the canals and everything is like 20 minutes from there. That's how far the airport is. You fly into that. That's like the major airport for the Netherlands. I don't know that for a fact, but I can't think of a bigger city in the Netherlands. And then you take a train from there. Train's like $25 or something like that. Train from there, an hour and a half to Eindhoven. There's two trains that go there. There's a fast train that goes with very few stops that goes to one of the major hubs, and then the other hub train that stops at a few places, like a local train. So you go to two different trains, and then you get to Eindhoven. Eindhoven itself is a college-y town. Everything is really nearby. Food wasn't cheap. It wasn't crazy expensive, but it wasn't cheap. Lodging, I mean, we stayed at the Holiday Inn, which is where every rollerblader stays. Pulling up at the parking lot, I saw Tom and Cameron in the parking lot, and you know, I was waving to them when I walked up, and it was great to see them and everything, but it's like random rollerbladers in the parking lot when you roll up, right? Everybody was there. It was like $89 a night. And it was a great room. Absolutely no problems with the room, yeah. It was...
Usually when you spend that little on a hotel here in the States, you're going to get bed bugs.
Yeah, it is not a good experience. No, this was great. And it had hotel bar. It had a full restaurant. Really good food. Super centrally located. It's like two blocks away from the train station. So you just walk from the train station straight to the hotel. And then maybe... four blocks away from city center, which is like the downtown area. We stayed at the city center last time. Our room at the city center last time was like $110. The room wasn't as good. It was smaller, but it was more centrally located. Still, $100 a night. So you go there, $700 for a ticket if you order, you know, 2 to 3 months early, right? If you know that you're coming out there. $100 a day for hotel, give or take. Say another $40 for food, like, I don't know, $30, $40. You could definitely go on a budget if you wanted to. There's grocery stores and things like that you could shop at. And those prices were normal, but eating at restaurants, you know, it's a restaurant price in a city center, so a little pricey.
Okay.
I mean, all in, you could do Winter Clash for less than $1,200. I don't think that's stretching it. Definitely not a crazy, you know, cheap trip. Like if you were going to, you know, Crowder, you know, where there's no admission, it's a free event, or Blading Cup, no admission.
If I spent $1,200 going to Crowder Cup, I did something really wrong.
Well, you bought something else. I don't know what you bought, but yeah. The rooms out here would be a lot more. You're definitely looking at more.
Well, I'm hoping you'll let me sleep in the warehouse.
I don't know that you want to, but it's all yours if you want it.
Perfect.
I think our room at Blading Cup in California was $140 a night, something like that.
That's dumb cheap for
California. Yeah, which wasn't bad. It was in Irvine. It was also in Santa Ana. It was in Santa Ana. It was near the airport. And I split the room with Todd, so both Todd and I were in the same room. $140 a night was nothing.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not the most expensive trip. And I'll say for an American who doesn't travel international often, it is a great country to visit. The people of the Netherlands are extremely hospitable. Like, they seemed like they were just like Canadians, you know? They were just like, I'm just here living my life, and I'm stoked.
I'm not going to be a dick.
I'm not going to be a dick. Yeah, I don't think that was... I don't think anybody was out there, again, trying to be a dick. English is taught in all schools. So English is on every sign. It's on every option, every menu. Everybody speaks it. They might not want to, but they can understand you. It is really easy to get around. The public transportation is super easy. Everything was clean. Like, great city. And obviously, Winterclash, there are so many people there who just want to hang out. If you are looking for a trip to get out of the States and you just want to see what the world is like, I think if you've never been to Europe, this is a really good chance for you to go. It is a proper European city with actual, like, transportation, and like, you'll get the experience that you will get going to a proper city in Europe. The only thing to look out for when you're walking around Eindhoven is they take their bikes seriously. So Amsterdam, Netherlands in general, is a very heavy bicycle community. Bicycles are like a first level form of transportation, maybe even more so than a car. They have like dedicated bike lanes all around the city, and they are designated by red bricks or red cement. If you are walking and you step in the red cement, you're going to get your ass hit. Like, they really will yell at you. They will ring their fucking bells. Like, they're very angry if you get in the way of a bike coming through. We got yelled at a few times. And I was walking with locals. We got yelled at a few times walking because there was no sidewalk, and having to walk through the bike path, and they were still yelling at us. So only word of warning, make sure that you're aware of the bike lanes, because they will zip around. They have the right of way. They will run your ass over if you're not careful. And they have no, you know, hesitation with it. They will beat you up. they are very skateable, though. So last year, I didn't skate this year, but last year I brought my 90s, and skating the bike lanes, absolutely fine. You see people skating them all the time. Which is why skating is so big in the Netherlands. It's another form of transportation along with the bikes. Not when it's snowing, not when it's raining, which it was when we were there. But yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful area.
That's awesome.
It's a good trip, man.
That just makes me think of Sven Bokhorst for some reason. Is he Dutch?
He is. He was there as well. So Sven was at the booth, the rollerblade booth.
I think he's the guy I would fangirl out super hard on.
He was skating hard too. He was skating at the event,
and he was the silent assassin. Of course, he was
so good, dude. Still killing it, amazing. What else? So so that was Red Eye. Next to Red Eye was Ground Control. Oh, not Ground Control. Create Originals. It was weird to meet Create Originals. So I've known Create Originals, the guy Brian Long, a couple of times. I met him a couple of times, but I don't know him. Like, I don't know him at all. But for he and I to be like competitors, like the closest competitors, there's a weird like relationship that we don't have. Like, we don't know each other at all. But
you know of each other.
Yeah. There's like exactly. There's like a brand animosity. But neither of us know each other at all. Like, we don't. I mean, I think I met him for the first time.
Did you give him a pair of frames?
No, I did not. I think I met him for the first time at Bittercold, and I saw him again last year at Winterclash, and I saw him this year. He was also in the same hotel, so for us to, you know, not know each other, we went from not knowing each other to knowing each other pretty well really quickly. Had breakfast one day, just really got to know everything about, you know, his past. Like, he's a big photographer. He grew up doing a lot of nature and hiking and stuff. Like, it seems like a really, really proper dude. loves rollerblading. Again, he does this because he loves it. And I mean, again, to go back to the Echo thing, it is great to see that there is an industry of people who are just out there because they love rollerblading. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely.
If rollerblading were to go away, it would be hard on those people. Meaning that those brands would not be able to stick around because, you know, they wouldn't have any sales. It was really great to hang with him a little bit. We saw each other a bunch just walking around the city and everything. It's just, it's one of those events where you get to know people a little bit on a different level. So very, very happy that we got the opportunity to do that. Didn't really check out his booth or anything like that. If I remember, they had a lot of soft goods, which soft goods were a big thing. I feel like everybody has a chance to buy product all the time. Like if you need frames, you go to a skate shop or you already order. But these trade shows, I think it's soft goods, like t-shirts, hats, hoodies, things like that. That's what people were after. That's what they were after for me as well. Like we sold, a lot of long sleeves and hoodies and all of our hats and all of that.
There's new long sleeve, the new standard ones.
Mm-hmm.
Those look really good.
Yeah, man.
I have to order some soon.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what I have left. I brought everything that I had to the trade show, and I got to update the inventory. That's a good reminder. I got to do that tomorrow. Yeah, man, it's funny because you're told that soft goods don't sell, and they don't sell. Shops don't sell soft goods because when people go to a shop online, they're looking for a specific product, or they don't know what they're looking for. And why would they buy a shirt if they didn't know anything? In a trade show or in a brick and mortar shop, I think walking around, you see the clothes and you're like, oh yeah, I want to get a t-shirt or something like that. And everybody had t-shirts. Everybody was selling shirts. Everybody was selling hats. And I think Create sold a lot. I saw a bunch of their hats around. They had these trucker hats with like an embroidered logo in front. It looked really nice. I don't think I've ever seen it advertised, you know, maybe it was on their Instagram or something like that. Like it would be available at Winter Clash, but, I think these events are good for people who just want to support your brand and they want to meet you and they want to say, like, you know, let me buy a shirt. I want to wear a hat, like that sort of thing. You know, it's really a celebration of the industry, celebration of rollerblading. It was really, 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 really good time. That ends the bottom. So that's the bottom trade show. That was it. So like what, seven brands that I actually had familiarity with, and then a few that I didn't really pay attention to. It wasn't super busy down there. It was a pretty constant flow of traffic. Our booth, we were primarily trying to get people to put skates on. It was one of the only times that people would have a chance to do it. So it was like, put your skate on, see what size you are. I had one guy who was super interested in it, try the skates on, and it's like, oh, these feel great. Went upstairs to This Is Soul. And This Is Soul brings basically their whole store with them because they're local, right? They load it up in a U-Haul, and or not a U-Haul, but you know what I mean, box truck. And they drive over to Eindhoven, and they set up. And they've got this huge booth space. They set up a full shop. And it's like, anything that you needed, we got it. So sending guys upstairs, and I'm like, hey, if you want to buy skates, like try them on here. But then go upstairs and try them on and, you know, tell Evo at This Is Soul that you want to buy a pair. And I had a guy come back in on the skates, panting. He's like, oh, man, I was just skating. These feel amazing. You were right. Thank you so much. I'm like, dude went from trying on the skates downstairs, going upstairs, buying the skates, setting them up, putting them on his feet, going and skating, and then coming
and then
back.
Came to find you
and
again.
He's like, hey, they're great. Such a fun feeling, man. Like,
that's awesome.
I've never had that. Like, with wheels, with frames, like, you don't really get that. Like, people aren't setting them up immediately, and then they have feedback on it. But because a skate is a full thing, like, it hugs your foot, it holds your frame, it's like the thing that you're grinding on. Like, there's a very personal relationship with a boot. And it's like, the dude was so stoked, he came back and was like, this is great. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Small world, man. It was good to see happy people, happy customers. Because I don't see that. Like, I see clips on Instagram where I get a message, but it's like not somebody actually smiling. Anyway. So then upstairs, so I already said this is always there. This is all one of the biggest shops in the Europe. One of the best shops in the world, but definitely the biggest shop in Europe. Maybe Grindhouse is bigger, but definitely a big shop. Loco being in the UK, technically continent Europe, but not in the EU. I don't honestly know who else was up there. I know them was up there. They had the 901, which is
Did you get to look at that?
I didn't look at it, no.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't go up to the... I didn't see anything. The only time I saw what was up there was either when I was walking past, because that was where the bathroom was, or on the YouTube videos afterwards, and I saw people, showing what the booths look like. Okay. But I didn't get to hold it. I didn't get to see it. From people who were there, they were saying that it looks familiar to a 909. Soul plate is a lot bigger. The frame has a deeper groove. But the boot looks very similar. It's supposed to be their price point skate. I think it's going to land at $259 complete versus $349 complete for the 909s now. I think that's the price. Might be wrong.
That sounds about right.
So, if they're trying to get something that's a little cheaper, this is a good way to do it. Faction, was really busy. That was the first time that they had their plastic boot out. We'd known about the plastic boot for a while. Super excited that he got it across the finish line. I don't know when production starts. I know that pre-orders start on Monday, the 24th. So if you're interested in picking up a pair, I don't know pricing. I want to say it was like $250 boot only. That might be wrong. $220 boot only.
The pre-order is on the website, but I think they haven't priced it. Don't buy this price.
Yeah. I don't know for sure. They're going to get hit with tariffs. So there's a 10% tariff now on anything coming from China, which means that Faction is going to have to pay an extra 10% on skates, which I don't know where that money ends up going, but it's definitely not stopping us from buying skates from China, because there's no other place to buy skates from, right? Yeah. Unless Rossi's wants to make them. Like, there's only one place that makes skates in the world, and that's China.
Yeah, they're $249.
$249.
Yeah. For the V1. But I don't know if they just haven't started the pre-sale yet, but their pre-sale says it's sold out on their website.
I think it starts on Monday. So maybe they're holding off to light up those SKUs until Monday morning. I don't know what time Monday. I know that Clark is in China right now, probably getting the Cameron skates all finalized and probably doing the plastic, like the finishing touches before they do any production. That would be my guess.
That does make sense.
Yeah.
That Cameron skate looks good.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Cameron.
I haven't seen it in person. I'm sure they had it at the booth, but again, I didn't go up there. Really clean, though. I love the carbon shell with Nubuck leather upper. I just think that's a really cool look.
I agree.
I loved my Adapts. I think that style is not used enough. I would love to see more with plastic and have them a little bit cheaper. I think the carbon is just an expensive process. And the carbon freeze kind of is the same thing, but there's so much material up there. It kind of loses that whole like feeling. I felt like the tactical V1s that I had, the factions were more like my Adapts, maybe a little stiffer in the upper than the Adapts. The Adapts, because it's an integrated liner, definitely felt more like a shoe. And the tactical V1s definitely felt like a liner that was in there. But I bet if you used a thinner liner, I think I used my Intuitions once, but if you used a thinner liner, especially on the top of your foot, it would feel very similar. I think that design is underrated. I think we need more, and it gives you more flexibility. Like, instead of just making a black skate or a white skate, you could make any design you wanted, you know?
Yeah.
Super, super cool.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they've made a lot of really smart design choices with the colorways they've done. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't love the shred pools because, like, that just didn't, but yeah. I can appreciate the design that went into it. And, they hit it out of the park with the first two releases too, with the black and the white boots.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Can't say enough good things about Clark.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what he does. But yeah, so, Faction was there.
Yep.
And then what was it? The big booth. Up there?
So there are a few other people. So who was it? Them. We already talked about, yep. This is Soul Faction. I want to say Powerslide obviously had a booth. I think I saw Mesmer up there. So, like, I don't know how big the booth was, but Powerslide, Icon, Mesmer, Playlife. I don't know that Gods was represented, but everybody else was represented. It was a very busy, busy section. I don't have much to say about Powerslide. I don't know much about the booth. It felt like in the clips that I saw, there were so many SKUs, like so many different skates that were on display. It was like just overload of products. I don't know that they had one thing that they were really showcasing. There was Rossi's. And if I remember it, so again, I hadn't been up there. From what I heard, there was one dude chilling at the Rossi's booth in like an outfit that doesn't fit the culture. Skate on the table with their premium M12, which is like a $550 Majestic 12.
That's insane.
Which
I did see that, and that's nuts.
I mean, do you, dude? Like, if you can sell that, go for it. That skate is a Majestic 12 with the premium RL2 liner with their new sole plate, which is a slightly modified Majestic 12 sole plate, a little bit wider. As far as I know, that's it, though. And then their new frame, which is their premium frame. I don't know if it's a flat frame. Is it a flat frame?
I don't remember that.
I think it's a flat frame. I think it's rockerable. Trying to think back. But it's a frame that came out last year. The RF1, I think it's called. They took their premium components, they put them together, they released a skate that was like an off green, and it's like $550 or something like that. It just seems like, I don't know.
Weird?
Yeah, I don't know. To their credit, they know that. They're only making 300 of them. It is a strange flex to have a Majestic 12 that would be more than $500. Majestic 12 is always this cheap ass skate. It's been around since the dawn of time. It was the boot that they used for the Rollerblade TRS that started aggressive skating. Like, it is that shell. So we're talking 40 years. I mean, how long has it been? Like 50 years?
It's been a long time.
When was it made? Do you think mid 80s they made that shell?
Possibly even sooner.
Maybe even sooner than that. Yeah.
I think it might have been like an old mountain biking boot.
Oh, man.
Mountain hiking?
No, that shell couldn't have been. Maybe ice skating. But
mountaineering?
So Rossi's used to make those boots, but I don't think they used the shell for that.
Someone showed me. Was it Guy? Mm. It might have been Guy. But someone was showing me that the company that owned the molds for the Argonauts still makes hiking boots with those molds.
What?
And I need a pair in the worst way.
Yeah, man. You need a pair of anyone.
But they're expensive as shit. They're like $700 boots. And I'm that's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I'm pretty sure it came from Guy. I'll find that you later and I'll send it to you.
Out. Yeah.
But yeah, like I'm looking at the Rossi's website, and I think it's because it's the quote unquote premium stuff, and it's a limited number. It's still, I mean, it's £400, or is that euro? With the little weird backwards e.
The euro is the e. Yeah, is it 400? So I might be wrong. It's not 500. It's 400. So euro to US is like 1 to 1.2, I think. So it's probably $450, give or take.
That's still nuts.
It is. It is crazy.
Interestingly enough, they only have UK 3, 4, UK 5, UK 6, no 7 or 8, 10s, 11s, 12s, 13s, and 14s. So did they already sell all those already?
Yeah, I wonder if they sold out of those. I mean, we laugh, but Rosie's is a very popular brand still. I don't know who skates them. I didn't say any of them at the event, aside from Nils. But it is a very popular brand. So maybe, you know, we're missing it. But to me, like, having a premium Majestic 12 kind of misses the point of the Majestic 12.
I agree.
At any rate.
If I fit that shell, would I be interested in having the super, you know, Gucci version?
Sure.
But, I mean, there's way better places I could spend $450 in skating-wise.
I would agree with that. Absolutely. Yeah. So who else was up there? I think... 8set was there, but 8set I think was there with them because 8set is the distributor. Well, technically not, but they work with them to distribute them skates and product in Europe.
Okay.
What other brands am I missing? I think that was all of them. And then there's Cougar. So Cougar is the... I guess they've been around for a while. Like, again, I've learned more about Cougar in the last week than I care to have ever learned about Cougar. Cougar is one of those brands that I would draw a similarity to maybe FR, maybe to Rollerblade, Flying Eagle, where they make skates. And they'll make skates for whatever market they see a need for. Primarily, they make recreational skates, probably with an 80mm aluminum frame. And that is just a really good business. It is a company based in China. They probably sell a shit ton of skates in China. They started making an aggressive skate, last year? 2 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, it started last year. Real quick, I just want to interject real quick.
Yeah.
I'm looking at their website, and they they have a four-wheeled, you know, free skate. Mm-hmm. The bearings it comes with, ABEC 11, chrome steel mechanical bearings.
Jesus. Again, we're not dealing with serious people here. Yeah,
But again... I've not heard bad things about the skates.
No. It's like Flying Eagle. Again, it's a...
Yeah.
It's a quality brand that has some serious marketing issues and branding issues. The name Cougar means something different here in the U.S. Yeah. Naming things after an animal is kind of weird. It might be a very, China brand thing. Like, I don't know. Again, it's not my culture. I don't know how things work over there. Flying Eagle, very high quality skates. I could only assume that Cougar is the same. I never heard about them until last year when they started announcing their aggressive skate. And I mean, that's fine. Like, again, there's no reason that they shouldn't be making skates for aggressive skating. Like, aggressive skating is just as popular as slalom, I bet. And they probably make skates that are designed for that. So they have Potier on their team. He is their main rider, but they've got a few other riders. So they have Julien Kudo on the team. They announced another guy who took third place, I think. I can't remember his name. But they're bulking up their team, right? So they're looking at it as kind of the same way that Seba did, where they want to get more of the feast skaters, the more flashy skate park skaters that do the flips, do the spins, because probably that is what will sell bigger big wheel skates. You know, if you see people doing big airs, you say, I want that. And you say, well, I don't want these aggressive skates, but I want a pair of rollerblades. I want to start skating. It's like, cool. Like, that is how Chris Edwards started it all with Rollerblade, right? doing the big ramps, and people bought rollerblade skates because Chris Edwards was able to do, you know, 540s on half pipes. There was some drama, though, and I'm sure that if you're listening to this, you know the drama. It's kind of hit the industry pretty hard. So while Cougar was up there having their booth, I mentioned earlier that there was an upstairs trade show, downstairs trade show. They were sold out of booth space. So we sponsored a booth last year, and they gave us an email this year saying, you know, we would love for you to come back. We have already sold out all of the upstairs booths. And they had reserved those booths for brands that had sponsored in the past. Now, personally, I don't know that I would have cared one way or the other. I like being downstairs. And I think if next year I get the opportunity of going upstairs, downstairs, I'll probably stay downstairs. And the reason for that is I like to... I'm there for one reason and one reason alone. I want to put feet in skates. And I don't want to bring in new customers as much as I want to service existing customers or have people who already know come by my booth and say, I want to know more about this. Like, I want people who have intent. I don't want to waste my time talking with people who are just like, what is this all about? And you know, there's a strategy to both. For me, that is what I'm interested in doing. I feel like our marketing is strong enough outside of the trade show that random passersby aren't going to be a good use of my time. I would rather invest a solid 10 minutes in getting somebody's foot fitting perfectly or answering all of their questions with a focused 10 minutes versus trying to juggle multiple people at once and, you know, handling random questions, everything. In saying that, there is incentive to being upstairs. And I think a lot of people would much rather be upstairs than downstairs. There is the brand Razors, who was, in years past, one of the sponsors of Winter Clash. They were not a sponsor this year. I could be wrong, I don't believe they had a booth last year. I was not upstairs last year, same as I was not upstairs this year. I don't know if they had a booth last year. But from what I had heard, they were told that they weren't going to be able to have a booth upstairs this year. Or if they were told that they could have a booth upstairs last year or this year, by the time they said, yes, we would like a booth, it was already sold out. Space was limited. When they send the emails, it is like a Taylor Swift ticket, like you've got to click on it so that you register quickly. And I registered the day that the emails came out. And they usually send you an email beforehand saying, hey, here's all the information that you need. Here's all of our sponsorship listings. Here's the pricing. Here's the dates. We will open up at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on this date. You should register at this time. And that is the most fair way that I can think of doing it. Give people a few days.
I agree.
Yeah, give people a few days of notice. Give them all the information they need, and then everybody knows exactly when to set their clocks. They send an email, right when they turn on the shopping cart. But obviously, if you don't get the email quickly, then that's just on you and your internet. But send the email at the same time. Click the link. Register. Done. I've never had a problem, and I've only done it 2 years, but I never had a problem. Always registered on time. No problem. Either they sold out so quickly upstairs that Razors wasn't able to get a booth, or Razors didn't take the time and the sense of urgency. Yeah, and just assumed, oh, well, I'll always have a spot. I don't know what happened. But they didn't get a booth. And maybe they should have had a booth. Maybe they wanted to have a booth. I don't know. I don't care. End of the day, we had plenty of people upstairs. We had plenty of people downstairs. I think if you wanted a booth downstairs, you could have had a booth downstairs. I don't know that Razors would have had a booth downstairs. I got a sense that they wanted to be upstairs, and if they weren't going to be upstairs, they weren't going to be there at all. And that to me was a weird flex, because I felt, again, as I said before, I felt like the downstairs trade show was solid. We had proper industry downstairs. Rollerblade was there. Echo was there. Creator Originals was there. I was there. Red Eye was there. Granted, maybe not the most popular brands. Maybe not the most established brands. We didn't have, you know, Grindhouse or This Is Soul or like the shops. But we had solid industry presence. And it was a good flow of traffic. I have no issues whatsoever with the downstairs street show. And to say that it wasn't as good downstairs as it was upstairs is just preposterous. I don't think that's it at all.
Yeah.
Anyway, Friday night. So this is the first night of the show. And remember, it goes from 2 to 10 or so. Friday night, Andy Wagner, who's the owner of Sunshine Distribution, who does razors, as well as Ground Control and Rainliners, posted on the Razors Instagram, or I should say the Razors Instagram was updated. It's not like he signed the post, but he's the guy who posted it. He posts a picture of the dude who is working the booth at Cougar. And you can find the picture. I'll probably link to it. I probably won't link to it in the show notes, but you could find it if you look hard enough. I don't really want to dwell on this also, but a fairly whiny kind of, it looks like they gave away our booth to Cougar. Like, we've been here forever, complaining sort of vibe. We've been here, you know, since the beginning and we didn't get a booth. And
it felt very entitled and contrived.
Very entitled, I think, is absolutely the right word. Like,
almost we deserve a booth.
Yeah, we deserve the booth. They gave it to this guy. And then instead of just saying this guy, it would have been even fine if he said this fucking guy, right? If he said, look, we've been here forever.
I would have rather him said
this brand. Yeah, exactly. And I don't think everybody would agree with that stance. But, like, if you were pissed off that you've been there, and who knows the situation behind it, but, like, maybe he tried to get the booth immediately and was like, oh man, I just missed out on, you know, Taylor Swift tickets and this guy got it before us. I don't mind him being pissed off about that.
Yeah. It's funny. But I'm pretty sure that's not how it went down.
That's not how it went down. It's also not his problem. That guy was just trying to get a booth. Yeah. He has nothing against razors. He doesn't give a fuck about razors. He just wanted a booth for his brand.
Showcase his product.
Absolutely. He is not, you are nobody to him. He just wants to showcase his brand. He has skaters who are competing, who eventually won the friggin' competition. He wants to represent. That is his right. Like, cool. Unfortunately, Andy also used some derogatory names for the guy who's behind the booth.
Yeah, like a stereotypical Asian, not cool name.
Yeah, exactly. So how to say this without being derogatory myself, a bunch of sounds that probably aren't even an Asian name to begin with, but stringing it together to make it sound like it was an Asian name. And it's like the oldest thing in the book, like what comics would do back in the 90s, that they would definitely be like, they're not comics anymore because that sort of joke just isn't tolerated anymore. We don't do that. It's not even fun. That's the whole point. It's not even funny. Yeah. It is just rude. Like, it has nothing to do with, oh, you didn't get the joke. It's just rude. Yeah. The guy is trying to, you know, do his thing. He's very proud of his products. He's very proud of his rider. He's flown all the way here from China to, you know, I don't know how often he had a booth. Again, I don't know the booths. I know that he wasn't downstairs last year. I don't know if this is his first year upstairs. He paid a lot of money to sponsor the event. They had the Cougar logo on the course. Like, you could tell that he was going heavy.
Big obstacles too.
Yeah. He was going heavy. And if Winter Clash said that, we can get you a booth and he got a booth, that's fine. Like, don't take it out on that dude. Like, that dude is not the reason that you didn't get a booth.
Yeah.
Anyway, so post his life, right? Along with, you know, the derogatory terms that he used, the derogatory name that he used for the guy. And I heard about this. So I'll give you my firsthand experience here. I heard about this. while I was downstairs at the booth, John Fromm comes over and he's like, dude, what did you see this? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, no, because like, first of all, I'm working the booth. I'm all by myself. I'm downstairs. Yeah. I don't know anything that's going on upstairs. And I'm in focus mode, right? I'm with, I mean, you've seen me at trade shows. I'm like man to man, like talking to people, eye contact, listening to what they're saying, answering their questions, like actually wanting to pay attention to these people who came all around the friggin' skate park to find me out and ask me questions. The least I could do is have undivided attention to them for as long as they want. Like, they're here to see me.
Absolutely.
Like, I totally get that. So yeah, no, I haven't seen anything. I'm not refreshing Instagram. I'm not checking DMs. I'm not checking my text message or anything like that. I don't even know what time it is. And John's like, dude, you got to see this. So he shows the picture. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I remember just my excitement of being in the show and everything just immediately dropped. I'm like, God damn it. Like, this was like, and I'll share. And this is just my feelings. Like I mentioned before in the show, like Disney, Winter Clash was all about people coming here just to have a great time.
Yeah.
And this guy wasn't. He was there with like animosity and just wanted to start shit.
Attitude.
And I'm like, what are you fuck? Like, did you not get the memo? Like, what are you doing, dude? And it bummed me out, you know, because I'm like, you know, I don't want to get into how, you know, my history with Andy or anything. I've known Andy forever. Okay. Andy came and found me last year and he sat and talked with me. He was very proud of the standard Omni. He thought that the skate was great. He was proud of me for doing it. He also is a very shady businessman and you can't separate the two. You know, my riders are all ex-Razors riders and they all have horrible stories to say because they were treated very poorly and that pisses me off. So as a brand owner and as an old acquaintance to Andy, it's hard for me to differentiate between the two because I always try to keep a professional, like I don't try to bring personal stuff into it. And I'm not the guy that's going to be like, no, I'm not going to talk to you. Like I'm always going to be trying to bring that professional attitude. So anything like...
I've seen you do that.
Yeah. And that might not be like... I wouldn't go out of my way to talk to him, but if he came to talk to me, I would definitely be hospitable and professional. It's like, fine. Like, we'll talk industry stuff. We always talk skates, and he's like a serious engineer. Like, that's his background. He has tons of patents. He's like smart guy. So I love talking to him about that sort of thing. But from a business perspective, I think he fucking sucks sometimes. And the way that he treated my team before they were on the team, it just sucks. And I it pisses me off. Because again, rollerblading is supposed to be fun. Like if you're just in this to screw people over, it's not okay. And that's not the sort of vibe that we want in the industry. And I take that really seriously because I've spent a lot of time and energy investing myself into the industry. I want only the best people involved. And if you're not going to be cool, get the fuck out. Right. I don't want you here.
I agree 100% because at the same time, like that's in the respect that you are also a company owner that makes skates, wheels, frames. Mm-hmm. That's your peer.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say that it does, but like it could be construed that that makes you look like a lesser person as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes. I don't want anybody to think that owners are all like that. You know, I take care of my riders and I think everybody should. So yeah, John shows me the picture. I'm like, fuck. Like, instant frown on my face. I'm like, God damn it. Like, I was having such a great time, and now here's some drama. Like, we didn't need this. We didn't need any drama. Nobody needed to be angry at anybody else. And then Andy came into the downstairs trade show, and he starts walking around the booths and everything. And I'm like, I didn't know that he was there. I didn't know that he was there, but he walked over to the Red Eye booth. Because he's just walking around. Like, again, I went through the circle. He starts walking around. He goes, you know, past Create and then goes to the Red Eye and was talking with Buck a little bit. And John left when Andy came and he's like, I don't want any part of this. Like, I can't deal with that. And I'm like, what? You know, what's going on? And that's when he showed me and I'm like, oh, fuck. All right. So he made the rounds, and then he came over to our booth, and I was talking with Jacob from Echo at the time. So Jacob came over. It was probably like 8 o'clock, 7:30 or so on Friday night. I don't know the time, but I mean, I'm sure you could find the post when the post was posted. It was around that time. Jacob came over, and we were just talking, and you know, I don't know what we were talking about. Irrelevant, but I think it was. Oh, it was about trying to get things sorted with China and trying to get production nailed down, and how it's really difficult to get things done the way that you want it to, and get the tolerances right and make sure that they do everything that they're supposed to and not change things and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway, one of the things I love about trade shows like this is that I can talk with other industry people and commiserate with the issues that we're all having, that we know that we're all having, but we assume in the heat of the moment that we're the only ones that are dealing with it. Yeah, exactly. everybody's got problems. It's how you deal with those problems that is important. Anyway, exactly. So Andy comes walking up, I knew the post. I didn't really understand the ramifications of it yet. But, you know, he comes up and we're just talking. And we start talking about industry and business and stuff like that. And then he walks off and Jacob walks off and just, you know, it was kind of just a real quick breeze by. I think I think a customer came by and then they kind of left. And then he wanted to try on skates. And I'm like, you know, it was great talking with you guys. You know, I'm going to help this guy. And then got skates on everything. So that was that as far as I was concerned. I'm like, all right, well, horrible post, stupid, like, pissed me off, but like whatever, like sucks, like ruined, you know. I don't think that I comprehended how big of an exposure that would be.
Yeah.
You know, but word travels fast in a community like ours.
It really did.
We aren't a big industry.
No.
And while I think Razor's account had like 70,000 followers or something like that, everybody knew about it immediately. And it was just started blowing up. Now, I wasn't really paying attention. I didn't really have any idea because I was so busy in my zone with my booth. I didn't really pay attention. I shut down, and that was the night that I shut down early. I shut down and I walked back to the hotel. I started getting texts from the team, standard team, and they're like, dude, did you see what's going on? Because it was happening while I was at the show, but I wasn't looking at my messages. And I started walking back to the hotel, and I opened up my phone. And I'm like, fuck, like there's a ton of messages. I'm looking at it. And they were all like, dude, I cannot believe he did that. Like, that's just unacceptable. Like, people are blowing up. People are so angry, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, wow, like this is bad. Still, I didn't think that it would be that bad because he has a history of being just kind of a jerk, you know? He, you know, with the whole Yondrill thing, like he screwed up big time, and made some promises for some payment plans and, exposure stuff and didn't follow through with it. And Yondi called him out and wrote a big post and said, look, this is what we agreed on. This is what happened. And this is, you know, what he owes me, and it didn't happen. And nothing
that was
really
a shitty deal too.
It was shitty, but nothing really happened after that. You know, like the industry didn't do anything. The community didn't do anything. People still skated Razors. Like it wasn't a big deal. But I feel like race is a differentiator because this isn't him picking on a person. This is him picking on something bigger than that. And I think that's, especially with the communities that we have, we're a very inclusive community. Like, all sexes, all genders, all colors, all ethnicities, all styles of, like, bring yourself, whoever you are, and you are accepted, you know? And that is one of the things that's so amazing about our community. And I think the difference is, fucking somebody over in business is one thing, but being racist to somebody is like, you're out. Like, this is exactly the opposite of what we want in our community. And it was a big deal. Like, so the next day people were talking to me about it, and like, wow, can you believe that? And I, yeah, I guess he got kicked out. Like, he's not allowed back. And I'm like, fuck, like, that's wild to me. And my day kind of went on as normal, because again, I'm out there for the drama. I'm there for, you know, helping people get feet and skates. That day, the show started at 11 and it went to 3:30. So it was a pretty packed morning. And I think I stuck around until 4. So that was the full day. So I was there the whole day. I don't think I thought about it once. You know, I was just there working, trying to help people get, you know, their questions answered. I met a lot of people. Really, again, a really great day again. End of the day, packed everything up, threw everything in the suitcases, took all the posters. We put posters on the wall, put all the posters down, and kept the posters for people. And then walked back to the hotel. And I think it was still brewing. And I think that kind of caught me off guard, because usually these things have a very quick half-life, you know? Like, somebody does something fucked up, and then after, you know, 12 hours or so, it's no big deal. But it was still pretty big. It was still hitting, like, I would bring up Facebook, and, like, the groups were 100, 200 comments long on the post. Oh, and I was like, wow, this is a big deal. Like, people are really pissed off about this. Bring it to present day. So, again, that was drama. I tried not to get involved with that. I had a very big show, a very busy day, just was done with all of that. The ramifications of that. So first hit, I think, on the Jumbo podcast, that Cody was doing with Andrew Broom. They were talking all about it. And Andrew announced that he was no longer skating for Razors. Now, Andrew Broom is one of their four pro riders.
Yeah, there's not many.
Something like that. Not they don't have a ton of pro riders that I can think of. I don't know their team super well. I don't follow their team super well. He got a pro skate last year. Or, yes, last year, maybe the year before. So fairly fresh. Maybe late 2023. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Before Thais, he got the pro skate. I think that was the thing. Because it was Aru, Nicholas Aru, and then Andrew Broom, and then Thais Clores, I think.
I'm pretty sure that's correct.
And before that, Jeff Howard, maybe. So yeah, he just announces I'm out. Like, this isn't me, you know? And I'll link to the podcast, but it's just like, this isn't me. I'm not, that's not okay.
Yeah, I don't fuck with this.
Yeah, I don't fuck with this. Yeah, that's basically it. And that was Tuesday, I think. I think I was actually on the treadmill when I watched YouTube on the treadmill. Maybe it was Wednesday. Watch YouTube on the treadmill. No, it was probably Tuesday. YouTube on the treadmill, and my YouTube video stopped. And I just usually let the algorithm do autoplay. And it just went straight to the Jumbo podcast. And I was like, oh, hey, look, it's Cody. You know, and I don't know Andrew, but I'm like, oh, you know, that's Andrew. I wonder what they're talking about. I wonder if they're talking about the drama. And then it was like a few minutes later, and he's like, I'm out. I'm like, oh, like I'm still like doing my walking and everything. I'm like, there you go. That was something.
Could you imagine you react like that and Amanda just happens to walk into the office?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh, Andrew Broom just left Razors. And yeah, she's like, the fuck are you talking about?
She has no interest. I told her this story and she was like, cause she doesn't care less about rollerblading or any of the stuff that I deal with. But she was like, that's bad.
Yeah.
Like, that's.
I think you could show that to anybody.
Yes.
And he'd be like, yeah, that's not a good look, bro.
Exactly. You could show it to anybody, and everybody knows that that was really bad. After Andrew left, so that was Tuesday night, the next day there was just rider after rider announcing that they're gone. You know, there's been... I don't know all their names again. I don't know a lot of the riders, but I kept getting these posts of people on the Slack that were like, oh, another one's gone, another one's gone, another one's gone. Like, fuck, like, yeah, this is bad.
I think there was at least four big writers
yeah.
that left.
I think
Jared right. Banning from Texas,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Andrew Broom, Burstyn.
I think he
left I don't before. Know if he left because of this.
No, he left. He left like before, kinda... but he was. Okay. Yes, he left, but it's a.
I think there's a couple of the just bigger European dream. Guys.
Yeah, there's a guy in Chicago who got Flo that I know got a post and said I'm out. What's crazier, and this is something that I'll share, and I'm sure I'm not alone. I'm getting a ton of messages from skaters who want skates and we're like, I need to get rid of these SLs. Like, wow. what should I ride? And a lot of them are saying, I was a racer skater, but I don't want to be associated with a racist. And yeah. I'm like, dude, like, again, from a professional business owner standpoint, I'm not going to gloat or do anything like dance on anyone's grave or anything like that. This was a big fuck up.
Yeah. And no, I agree 100%.
I mean, I don't know if there's any way around it. I don't know if there's been anything like this ever in our industry where an owner did something that was so bad that I can't think of anything that people were like, I'm out.
No, I can't really think of anything either. Because even when the thing happened with Farmer, when he left,
right. Yeah,
with like that, I don't remember that really yeah. being that big of a deal.
Yeah, it hit hard, but again, I think it was.
Oh, I should say it didn't seem to affect people's.
Right.
Willingness to support that company.
Right. Right.
Not.
It was a big,
we'll leave it at
yeah,
that.
I agree with you. Yeah. Words yeah. are hard sometimes, but I think the sentiment is there. I think it's easy to know that this was the line and
yeah, it was a very straw that broke the camel's back.
Oh yeah. Ultimately,
it was a pretty fucking big straw.
You don't want to be associated with a racist, and whether racist is the right term, I don't know. But if people are seeing this as indicative of the person, not yeah. just, oh, I just said something that I didn't mean or whatever. Like, everybody's entitled to their opinions and how they perceive things. I'm getting enough messages from people saying, I don't want to be associated with this. I don't want to represent this. I don't want to, that it's crazy to me.
Yeah, it really is nuts. Like,
yeah,
it's an insane thing.
It is. At any rate, so that was kind of the end of the trade show of Winter Clash and everything. And unfortunately, it kind of took the second day, definitely, that there was a bit of a cloud over it. I was really busy, but people were still talking about it.
Yeah.
It's like, it really impacted the day. That second day, I got back to the hotel. This is where things got a little weird because my flight. So there was supposed to be really bad weather coming through Massachusetts, where I was supposed to be flying into Boston on the way back, and I was flying out of Amsterdam. My flight was at 11:20, so I had to get there. You know, hour and a half train ride. I had to get there 2 hours early. So say I get there at 9:00. I had to get on a train at like 6:30 in order to get there in time because I think the train started around 6:45 or so at the Eindhoven station. So I would have been 6:45, get there, you know, 8:30 or so, 8:45, and then get on the flight. Problem is that my flight, as I was walking back from the trade show, I got a message that my flight was potentially going to be canceled or delayed because of bad weather in Boston. And I was like, shit, like, I don't want to get stuck in Amsterdam for a night. That would suck. I don't know how many other flights there are getting out. So what do I do? So I get back to the hotel and I flew Delta and I got on the Delta app and I'm trying to figure it out. And they're like, oh, you can't change your flight, it's within 24 hours. And I'm like, but you just sent me an email saying that I should change my flight because there's severe weather. And I'm like, all right, well, what do I do? Call them, right? Well, the only number that I could find is a toll-free number. That doesn't work if you're outside of the U.S. So yeah. You can't physically call the toll-free number, and that's the only number that was listed. So I'm like, shit. So I text my wife. And I'm like, hey, honey, I'm potentially stuck, and I'm hoping that you can help me. This is the number. Can you give them a call and see if you can change my flight? And she was like, sure. Like, what's your confirmation number? Like, all the information. So she gets a hold of them. She's figuring it out. She was able to get me changed from a flight from Amsterdam to Boston at 11. Instead, I flew from Amsterdam to Paris. And from Paris, there's a direct to Raleigh-Durham Airport, which is our local airport.
Okay.
Problem is that it is a 9:30 flight. And as I said before, the trains don't start until 6:30. So, hour and a half train. I get there at what, 8:15?
Yeah.
There's absolutely no way I'm going to get through from the train station, through the airport, through baggage check to the terminal for an international flight. No way. No. So, I'm like, what do I do? So, thankfully, my friend Leslie was still at the event. So the event was going on late. So the trade show closed at 3:30, probably left there around 4:15, depending on how long it took me to break everything down. And I'm walking back, and that's when I get the message. So it's like 5 o'clock or so. I get back to the hotel, and I'm like, all right, figure out the plane situation. You know, my wife handles it all. By the time I had the new flight, it was like 6 o'clock or so, maybe 6:30. And I'm like, how do I get to the airport in enough time so that I can do this? Like, do I take a train tonight and then find a hotel in Amsterdam? I even looked at taking an Uber, like early morning from the hotel in Eindhoven to the airport in Amsterdam. It was like 300 euro. I'm like, oh, fuck, dude. Nightmare, right? Yeah. So what I ended up doing is Leslie and Remy, who are the two guys that I drove with from the airport to the hotel, they were staying at the event because the event was still going. So the trade show closed at 3:30, but AM finals and men's finals were right after. And I think they were going until like 10 o'clock. So they were there. They were hanging out. They were watching the skating and everything. And I text Leslie. I'm like, hey, dude, like, when are you leaving? And do you still have room in your car? And he's like, absolutely. Like, we'll come pick you up. So they are, after the event, coming by the hotel, picking me up, and then driving me over to the airport. And I got a hotel room just around the corner from the airport. Again, I think it was 110 bucks or something like that at the airport, which would be crazy.
That's a hell of a deal.
Yeah, it would be crazy. It was a very old hotel, like still in high, like, quality, but you could tell like it was a pretty dated hotel. But the room was big, very, very tall hotel. It looked like a really nice hotel. I was only there for 3 hours. So
yeah.
the finals. So I get some, how did I eat that lunch, that dinner? Oh, you know what? I went down to the restaurant downstairs and I ate a big steak and I was like, I'm treating myself. Do it right, right? So I had a big steak, beautiful vegetables. Like they had these crazy vegetables, like stuff that I'd never had, I don't think. And like French fries or some shit. It was weird. So I finished that. I go back up to the room and I'm just sitting in bed. I'm like, should I take a nap? Like I'm pretty exhausted. I'm still having jet lag. I had a really rough jet lag time. And I break out my laptop and I'm watching the live stream because Ricardo Lino was doing a live stream with Matt Mickey emceeing. And I'm like, this awesome. Is cool. So I could watch the event. So I was watching the event while it was finishing up, not only so that I could see the skating, but so that I could know when they were going to leave so that I could get ready because I'm, you know, just laying in bed chilling. Like I'm packed up, but I know that I'm leaving, but I have the room. So I'm like, I'm just going to sit here and rest.
Yeah.
And it was a late night. So the event ended around 10:30, I think. And the last trick was Julien Coudeau did a sweat stance to like 540 off this really tall, like, it's not even a drop in, it's kind of like a vert wall, and then there's a rail on top of the vert wall. It's super weird, but sweat stance and then 540 off. Before then, Nils was trying to do a 360 alley-oop topsail, I guess it would be. So 360 and then another 180 and land topsail on this rail, which I think he's done years past. Yeah, he did it
in REMS.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's like 10 years ago or whatever. I remember we looked at that clip. So he was trying to do that again, but obviously Nils is amazing, but I mean, it's been a little bit older. Yeah. And I'll say he was on M12s, not on REMS. And REMS, he probably could have landed it because that soul plate is fucking big. Anyway, he must have done it like 10 minutes. Throwing himself, because you get into that zone, and I've never been in that world, but you got to imagine you get close to hitting it, you're surrounded by hundreds of people, and they're all over the street course. Like, by the time final starts, it's like single trick. So it's like they make this runway for you to get to the spot, and everything else is just like people as close as possible. It's just packed like sardines, right? Flying down this ramp. Air 360 alley-oop topsail. Ah, almost made it. Okay, I'll do it again. Air 360 alley-oop topsail. Oh, I'll do it again. It's like, did that for 10 minutes. Like, Jesus, dude, come on. I got to get to the airport. In this comp. So they finished the comp, and it's pretty clear that Coudeau won. Like, Nils needed to get that last trick, didn't get the last trick. Maybe if he got it, he would have won, but he didn't get it. He locked a few times, but he didn't really slide. He didn't really, you know, land it. Coudeau did his, you know, sweaty 540 off, and then kind of didn't land it, but definitely enough to count. Like, you know, Kudo's style is always kind of flailing about anyway. Yeah. So for him, maybe it was a land. Like, I don't know. But then he went back up there.
He rolls away, stomped it.
But he goes back up there and he does it again. I'm like, fuck, dude, you don't have to do it again. Like, you already won. Like, you're good. Yeah. But he did it again and landed it really clean. Big, big trick. And then they're like, all right, the event is over. Now the judges are going to go to the judges' room and determine the winners. I'm like, fuck, how long is this going to take? Like, why did you, like, you don't know who won? Like, what are you doing? So they go, and it's like 10:30 that they leave. I shit you not, Ben, midnight rolls around, and Leslie's like, hey, we're going to call it. We're going to come back now. I'm like, thank you. Like, because they wanted to stick around to see the winners. I don't blame them. Yeah. Like, they said that the event would be over at 10, and that the ceremony would be at 10:30. That was what the schedule said. Midnight comes around, and they still haven't announced the winner. And I'm like, Jesus, dude. Like, I am already jet-lagged, barely sleeping, have been up on my feet forever, like, by myself, and then, you know, going through the stress of trying to do this airport shuffle, and then now I got to figure out where to go. Plus, I've been laying in bed, like, in a dark room, because I'm like, should I sleep? Should I not? Like, I don't know how long it should take. So midnight comes around.
So you're in this even weirder limbo
weird
area.
State, dude. I'm in the worst place. So he's like, yeah, okay, we're going to call it. We're on our way down. Meet us, you know, at the driveway, and I'll, you know, pick you up. So we get in the car. He drives over. The hotel, this is also important. The hotel is like a 20-minute walk, 25-minute walk. Maybe a 10-minute skate, and like a 5-minute drive from the spot. And there's only one hotel near the spot, near the skate park. So it's not like you can really stay there. These are the closest hotels, so it's always going to be like a 20-minute walk. Anyway, they pull up, load the suitcases in. I'm in the back. I did not fall asleep, but I was kind of like not really paying attention to what was going on. Get to the hotel at like 1:30.
Oh, man.
My flight is at 9:30, and I'm like, shit. So I get to the hotel, check in, probably get to my room around 2 o'clock, And the first, I have to get a shuttle to the airport. Flight's at 9:30, so I'm like, okay, I'll leave at 7, because then it'll give me, you know, hotel's 10 minutes, 15 minutes away. Yep. It'll give me a good 2 hours to get through, you know, the baggage claim and everything. The 7 o'clock shuttle was full, because obviously everybody's trying to get to the airport, and that's a good time to wake up. So I have to wake up at 6:30 in order to get a shuttle. So it's 2 o'clock, and I'm finally in my room, probably falling asleep at like 2:30, definitely not sleeping well, up at 6:30, shitting myself because I'm worried that I'm going to miss my flight, right? So yes. I'm like setting the alarm at 6:01, 6:02, 6:03, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm like, I can't oversleep. I make a coffee because I don't know the coffee situation. I make a coffee in my room with a little Nespresso thingy. Brush my teeth, drink my quick coffee, get downstairs, get on the shuttle, get through customs and airport. And everything was fine then. It was a long flight back.
Did you get to sleep at all?
I slept a little bit. Okay. Not much, maybe an hour. It was a long flight. So the flight to Paris was quick, like an hour and a half. And funny enough, you'd appreciate this. I land in Paris. I'm like, I wonder how far I am from the Eiffel Tower, right? Because I don't know geography of local countries. You know, I know where France is, but I don't know where the airport is in relation to anything else. Exactly, so I bring up Google Maps, and I'm like, oh, it's like 20-minute, 30-minute train ride. I'm like, that's cool. Like, so if you flew into Paris, which is Charles de Gaulle Airport, which is the biggest airport in France, you fly into Paris, and it's like, okay, I could take the train from here. And it's a direct flight from Raleigh-Durham. So, like, you know, 8 hours there, direct flight, and then take a train for 30 minutes, and you're, you know, you're downtown Paris. I'm like,
that's awesome.
Now, from the airport, how far is Disneyland? Because Disney Paris is in the country. I just don't know where it is. Yeah. And it's like a 20-25 minute train in the opposite direction. So I'm like, dude, man, how long is my layover? Right? Yeah. So I'm like, can I make it? Can I get to the parks and then
come just back? Just get a pin and then go back to the
All
airport.
I need is a picture in front of the castle and then get myself out of there. I don't need to go on any rides. But alas, I didn't leave. It was not quite enough time, and I was not in a gambling spirit. But then, my flight back was fine. Absolutely no issues. I slept for like an hour, maybe not much. Got home, was freaked out again because I got COVID last time and I had the sniffles on the way home. So I'm like, I'm going to get sick again because I meet everybody and I'm, you know, it's a busy enclosed trade show floor. But thankfully I did not get COVID. I tested that night. I tested because I didn't want to bring it home to the kids. Tested that night, tested the next day. Absolutely nothing. And I feel fine. I've been worn out all week. But I definitely feel fine. But that's
because your sleep schedule got thrown off.
Yeah, my sleep schedule is all off. It was a great trip, man. I'm not going to let the shit that went down ruin it. Like, I had a really great time. I met some amazing people. I think the spirit of Winter Clash is such that it is so strong that one person being an ass is not going to bring it down. Again, I think the organizers worked so well to mitigate any issues and just move past it and focus on what was important, which was everybody getting together, having a great time rollerblading, celebrating rollerblading. It is what we need. You know, we need more of these because we don't have that many people. So any opportunity, Blading Cup, Crowder, Frankie's Comp, the Blading Cup in France, the Blading Cup in Asia, there's plenty of events, Winter Clash, obviously. There's plenty of events. If you have an event near you or if you haven't been to one of these big events, highly recommend you plan on the next one. Get your butt out there. Like, price-wise, I mean, what was $1,200 or so? Say $1,500 all in. Yeah, it's
not inconceivable.
It is expensive. It is not inconceivable. It is a experience that you won't forget. If you can't swing that, do Blading Cup in Santa Ana. We will be out there again. It will be end of October, beginning of November again. It is a 2-day event. it is a lot more affordable. Again, hotels out there, probably same price, $100-$150 or so. You won't need to spend too much. Food is normal. And a flight here, you know, I think my flight to Blading Cup was like $500, something like that, round trip. And that's, you know, East Coast to West Coast. So, and I think I flew into Santa Ana. Orange County Airport, not LAX. You can get it even cheaper and probably a direct if you flew into LAX, but it's like an hour drive. Yeah, you don't want to go to LAX if you don't have to. Orange County was nice. In and out, absolutely no problems. And I mean, for less than $1,000, you can do Blading Cup. I mean, hell, probably $800. You could do Blading Cup for the weekend. Definitely on a different level.
Does Spirit fly into Santa Ana?
Seriously. I know they fly into Miami, so maybe that's what you can take if you wanted to go down to Frankie's event. Events are great.
Terrible idea.
You can be yourself, and that's what's great. You could talk skating. There's always supplemental stuff, panel interviews, movie premieres, you know, sessions like outside. We did the Slack session again. I wasn't participating this year because I'm still kind of injured, so I didn't want to ruin myself and risk hurting myself. But they did the Slack session again. They rented out a skate park, Camille, on the Slack, also with Pardon Clothing. It's Pardon Skate Supply, I think, is the name of the company. He rented out, which reminds me, I owe him some money for that. I told him I would help sponsor. There were like 30 skaters at this event. Rented out the whole skate park just for rollerbladers for the morning. Again, it's just celebrating skating. And it's like, who wouldn't want to do that? If you're listening to this, you definitely should. Like, it is, you know, whatever you spend your money on, whatever you spend your time on, this is the sort of thing that you're going to kick yourself because you never participated. It is super important that you can go to these events. You can see other rollerbladers rollerblading. You can meet rollerbladers, talk about rollerblading. Like, if it's important to you, if it's something that is a big part of your life, like, you owe it to yourself to get out to these events.
Yeah. Even if you can only do it once.
Yeah.
It sounds awesome. Like more of the stuff that you're talking about, like the side quests for Winter Clash sound way more fun to me.
And you can do that. Winter Clash as a exhibitor is very different. I am a very siloed person sitting in a spot, and if you need to find Lawrence, you'll find Lawrence. That's where he is all weekend. But if you just
I don't think you even left the booth to go to the bathroom at Cransgiving.
I didn't during the whole 8-hour stint here either, because he was gonna cover the booth. Like, I was by myself.
True.
It was a rough go, Ben. But I made it through. Yeah, if you wanted to go to Winter Clash, you could do anything. You know, there were open sessions where you could skate. You could compete if you wanted to. There's this ledge that people skate just around the block. That is just this nice, marbly outdoor ledge that every time you walked by, there were these random rollerbladers skating. It's so cool. There's this crazy down, like, so in order to get to the city center from our hotel, it's on the opposite side of the train station, and you know you can't walk across the train tracks, that would be bad. So you go underneath the train tracks, and there's this round like staircase that brings you down to the under level that goes underneath the city area. And there were these buttery ledges that leads down to that. And every time I walked, there were rollerbladers sessioning the ledges.
That's awesome.
Like, it's just, it's the bizarro world, because you don't see that in normal life. But you've taken a break from reality, and you're in the rollerblading world, like Mecca for rollerblading. It kind of reminded me of the when we went to, what year is it, at Woodward. And it's like, you just walk around, and there's just like a ledge and people sessioning it. And it's like, cool. Like, yeah, we're all here just having a good time. I mean, and you know, say the Holiday Inn, every rollerblader's there. Like, we're all hanging in the same place. It's very similar to what we did at, what year is it? I highly recommend it. If you can find the time and you had the means, it is worth saving up for. Next year, likely the same time, first weekend of February, it is a good event to plan on going to.
Yeah, I'm going to have to see if I might be able to make that happen.
Yeah, you should.
In the next couple of years. I'd love to do that. I'll be able to give you a bathroom break in the booth.
Well, hopefully we'll have more team representation next time. Unfortunately, so Stefan was actually planning on going. He had some really bad news. He's been injured, and he had some surgery, and the surgery took longer to heal, and then he had to have another... Like, it's all this convoluted thing, but it turns out he's going to be fine. He is back skating now. He's getting his legs back under him. He was going to go, but... Because we didn't find out until it was too late. Tickets were like $2,000 when he found out. And I was like, you know, I am more than happy to fly you around. I would rather fly you to Blading Cup and to Crowder than just doing Winter Clash. Like, I got the booth. Same with Luke. Luke was going to compete. And we actually registered him to compete. Unfortunately, his passport, he put in for a renewal like 2 months ago. And it usually takes 48 hours to start the process. It took a month, and it was just sitting there. He's like, wow. Dude, I don't even know. So by the time we actually got confirmation that his passport was going to get renewed, ticket prices were at like $1,800. I'm like, fuck, man. Like, I just can't.
That sucks.
Yeah, I just can't justify that. Like, I would much rather have him go to France for Blading Cup and California for Blading Cup and the Crowder Cup for the price of going to one Winter Clash. Like, it just doesn't...
Exactly, yeah. It makes more sense to use that money smartly.
Yeah, yeah. Next year, though, I hope that we're able to do it. It would be great to have everybody out like we did last year. With a skate company, it makes sense. You know, I am bringing all of my skates. I could fit 6 shells in 2 suitcases. So I take the boot onlys, I bring an extra pair of frames for the demo. And then I've got extra small, small, medium, large, extra large, all sitting there ready to give to people to try on. And I don't think they have that experience anywhere else. It's very rare for somebody to have a skate shop that they can go to. And This Is Soul is a great shop, but if you don't always already live in Amsterdam or in the Netherlands, it's a hike. If you're already there, what better place for me to get skates on people's feet? So we'll be doing every trade show that we can. I think it's important that as a skate brand that we represent and support events. And also it's important that I have a booth there so that people can try stuff on, can see what Standard's all about. Because ultimately these are the people that we want skating our stuff. People who will go to events, who will see, you know, what's going on in the industry and what's going on in the community, be part of the community. Those are the people that I want skating Standards.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.